Well, perhaps the most revealing aspect of Jefferson's home life is literally his home. Monticello is one of the great architectural achievements of early American history. It's neoclassically correct. It adheres to the Palladian forms. It's completely symmetrical in its exterior. And Jefferson was, in fact, an excellent draftsman. He probably learned that from his father. And his vision was always schematic. And he had, in fact, talked about Virginia architecture in Notes on the State of Virginia, a very revealing statement. The genius of architecture seems to have shed its maledictions over this land. Buildings are often erected by individuals of considerable expanse. To give these symmetry and taste would not increase their cost. It would only change the arrangement of the materials, the form and combination of the members. This would often cost less than the burden of barbarous ornaments with which these buildings are sometimes charged. And here he's referring to the Baroque accents associated with Wren, and so expressive of the wealth and status associated with Palladian American architecture. But the first principles of the art are unknown, and there exists scarcely a model among us sufficiently chaste to give an idea of them. And that will be the key to Jefferson's architecture. The elements are, in fact, incredibly simple and chaste. There's a real Roman or almost Spartan simplicity, a Republican purity to them. And indeed, that Roman element is very important in his entire vision. Jefferson's Monticello is unique. It's the only plantation house built on a mountaintop, which is, again, reminiscent of the Roman villa. Okay. In fact, it was built in two phases. First designed in 1769 and constructed from 1771 to 1782, when he prepares to go to the Continental Congress and then Europe. This Monticello, this first Monticello, is a simple cruciform plan. The main axis is east-west, with lateral rooms flanked by octagonal bays. The original facade was, again, conventionally Palladian. Compare it to the rear view of the Via Cornaro, and it's very similar to his original plan. It's a two-story facade with a second-floor portico with Ionic columns over a Doric order below. And it's a very massive and vertical and somewhat clumsy design, but again has the same accents of the Palladio original. In Europe, however, he is transformed in his architectural imagination by really two things. One, Roman architecture, which we looked at his gazing at the Maison Carrée in Nîmes, and also by the new Parisian townhouse architecture, particularly the Hôtel de Somme. And he writes, "While in Paris, I was violently smitten by the Hôtel de Somme and used to go to the Tuileries almost daily to look at it." And these new style townhouses, what was distinctive about them was that they stressed privacy and intimacy over ostentatious display. And indeed, if you get to Paris, take a look at the river facade of the Hôtel de Somme and you'll see it's in fact the inspiration for the garden facade of Monticello. So when Jefferson returns to America, he resumes construction, demolishing much of the original building in favor of a new, final plan. So let's take a look at this plan. Jefferson starts by changing the floor plan, and he does this by doubling the lateral rooms on the side of that projecting sort of bullet that runs from east to west. And this adds great depth to the building. In fact, it also adds an additional four rooms on the ground floor, and as we'll see on the second floor as well. Similarly, the external facade is transformed. The clumsy verticality of the original design is dropped for a monumental and thoroughly horizontal effect. And if we look at it from the garden facade, what we see is that he accents this horizontal sense by both the entablature, which is the white border above the columns, and by the balustrade, which is the railing that runs along the roof line. Both of these are placed over very simple Spartan Doric orders of columns and pediments. And the pediment is, in fact, not only simple and Spartan, but extremely powerful. The small window in the middle of it transforms it into a translucent, almost inviting, although simple design. And there's an important symbolism to this house. It tells us, in fact, a story. So let's see the story it tells us. We approach from the northeast to the main entrance, which is the east entrance.